newspaper and your host for the Chico News and Review radio show here on KZFR 90.1 FM and KZFR.org. On today's show, we talked to CNR contributing editor Evan Tuchinski about the new climate action plans for both the city of Chico and Butte County. We listen in on a new experimental recording project by local musician Rami Rodriguez, and we say goodbye to a local arts giant. But first, we're starting today's show with a special feature. The following segment was produced by local activist, journalist, and longtime KZFR programmer Guillermo Mash. It's part of his latest grassroots media and civic engagement endeavor, Imagining Community. Mash's project is primarily focused on environmental issues, but in this case, he's turned the microphones towards art as he was on site at 945 West 2nd Street for the dedication of the mural, The Last Forgotten Flower. The collaborative work was created by Shane Grammer, Christian Garcia, and Ali Metters-Knight to raise awareness of the issue of missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls, and it brings a striking work of art and powerful message to the public space, just a couple blocks from the Chico State campus.
The latest Shane Grammer mural project, titled The Last Forgotten Flower, Shedding Cultural Awareness of Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women, was all set to commence at 5th and Ivy on Saturday, March 20th, when Grammer's newly formed Hope Through Art Foundation received news the day prior to the installation that the location was a no-go. Although the owner of the wall was thrilled to beautify her business with the mastery of an artist who gained national fame for his burn scar murals in Paradise, permission to use the lawn of an adjacent fraternity house as a staging area was denied. That's when Ali Metters-Knight, a local Native American artist and Machupta tribal member, sprang into action, securing an alternative site.
We have a relationship with this business owner on this building on Cedar Street where I had come in and asked him to put up some art reflecting Indigenous village, Native people from this area. Christian helped put some flicker birds, some bears, some other images up. When this project was about to get canceled, we had free space on this building. So because we knew that the building owner was pretty open for free art on their building, we were able to move it and within 24 hours and get the location here, facing the train, facing when people come as guests to this community from the tracks, and also facing Chico State University and their workout room. So when they're sitting on their workout rooms exercising, they'll be looking at our wall.
So I'm here with the building owner, Todd White. How does this make you feel, Todd, seeing this all come together so quickly and so beautifully?
You know, this issue is huge. It's a lot bigger than, you know, me or you, and I'm just glad that I'm able to contribute at all. You know, I really wasn't aware of this issue, and I think that making people aware is very important.
The new mural site at 2nd and Cedar was not only a better location visually, its canvas was much bigger than the original site and allowed local mural artist Christian Garcia to contribute a wolf to the tapestry along with Indian paintbrush flowers painted by Ali Metters-Knight, all done alongside Grammer's stunning portrait of a Native American woman. Let's listen now to all three of the artists sharing thoughts on their collaborative work with Ron Topi on location for Imagining Community.
I'm here with Christian Garcia right now, who's one of the muralists working on this project. What's your involvement with this?
My involvement is, I guess, just being artists and friends in the community. And I was blessed and thankful that Ali gave me the first opportunity on the original wall that we did here for the Machuptan tribal land and the representative pieces that were on the front of this building. And so I got involved this time around as a friend of Shane Grammer's and reaching out to Ali and facilitate this and make it happen on the fly.
I do a lot of work with bringing awareness to anti-child trafficking. So that's been my heart for, gosh, over a decade now. I've been to Cambodia where girls are sold into brothels down to 5 years old, and that's something my wife and I want to continue to bring awareness using art for the rest of my life. Paradise is really a lot of the reason why I started my foundation, because of the impact that those murals had on so many people throughout that area really has changed my life in a drastic way. I still have people that fall in my arms and weep that just put me on this mission. Like, I got to continue to do projects that make impact in the world. And one of the things that are really on our hearts is trafficking, but also Native Americans and just the way they're treated and the whole issue of girls are and young boys are trafficked, and no one really talks about it or anything. Their women are battered, beaten, murdered, and it's just like it's like I've heard people call it forgotten flowers. So our heart was to just do a project that was involving local tribes that would come and paint this together. So my goal is, and it's just a simple goal, is to bring hope through art, involve people so that they have an opportunity to come together and be a part of a project that brings awareness to who they are as a people, but also to the issues that are going on throughout their tribe or their culture. And then the rest, you know, is up to God, right, you know, right. And the people. So,
what tribes collaborated in this? And I see a lot of handprints on one side of the wall here.
Yeah.
Who made all those handprints?
The handprint is very symbolic to the issue of trafficking. And so I thought it'd be really cool to have like this large handprint, but these are all handprints for about 15 to 20 people yesterday from Pomo and Machuta tribe. And they all came together and just overlaid and overlaid and overlaid. And then one of the gals, her name's Connie, did the black handprints going all the way down the wall, which kind of feathered out all the paint and the color. And it was amazing. I mean, very involved. We had kids to grandmas, and it was unbelievable.
Welcome to occupied Machuta territory, also known as Chico, California. Murdered and missing indigenous women is a huge issue. If you don't know, a lot of Indian country is on federal land. And that means federal agents have to go look for people that hurt Native women. And a lot of them don't. And they don't have a database. And they don't keep track of who's missing and who went where and why. And that's a lot of women. And even in places like this where we don't have a lot of tribal property or federal trust land where people are living, what we do have are police officers. And we have the system that don't care about what happens to Native women, whether it be domestic violence, missing, murdered, something. And so we've always had to have a community effort to care on top of and in between all the people that don't care. And so this, for the first time, all the people that do care tried to do something together.
The event was attended by some 60 people, including Debla Lucero, Butte County Board of Supervisors for District Number 2, who had this to say about her experience.
Well, it's pretty powerful. I would say that just walking up on it, it's kind of breathtaking. It's too long in coming. We have so many messages of Indigenous people that need to get out to the public, and it's just far too long. This is their land. This was their land. And what we need to do is honor the history of the Maidu and the Machuta and the Indigenous people of our area. And for too long, there's just been so much hurt. So I'm hoping that with murals like this, it can bring about awareness for the struggles that Indigenous people are experiencing. And hopefully, compassion and empathy, which we all need more of.
Guillermo Mash signing off for this Imagining Community special report for Chico News and Review on the radio.
For an extended version of the story, visit the Imagining Community webpage at anchor.fm/imagining-community or search Imagining Community at most major streaming services. And for information on how to support Imagining Community and MASH's upcoming year-long series on water, visit facebook.com/imaginingcommunity. You're listening to the Chico News and Review Show on KZFR 90.1 FM and KZFR.org. In 2014, Butte County and the City of Chico adopted climate action plans in an attempt to reduce greenhouse gas emissions in this area in accordance with State of California requirements. Since then, we've been in a near constant state of drought, and wildfires of ever-increasing intensity have ravaged the North State. It's from this vantage point of being a frontline community in the fight to curb global warming that the county and the city are now drafting plans to meet the next emission targets. For a just-published online feature titled Planning for a Future, CNR contributing editor Evan Tuchinski spoke with the Chico Climate Commissioner Mark Steeman and other local leaders about the new plan, and he joins us now to share what he learned.
So the previous climate action plans for both Butte County and the city of Chico were approved back in 2014. What were the key actions recommended by those plans? What were the goals?
Well, the goals were to reduce carbon emissions because they needed to meet the state's overall plan. The state had AB 32 pass in 2006, and that set 2020 as a target date to have reductions match 1990 greenhouse gas emissions. Okay. And so each municipality needs to make sure that it's doing its part. And based on what each municipality's emissions were, they had different figures they wanted to match. So Chico set a goal of reducing its emissions from its baseline to a 25% reduction, and Butte County had a 15% reduction as its goal. And Chico surpassed it by a bit, and Butte County fell short by a bit based on the numbers that were released last year. They both use the same state databases, so everybody's operating off the same numbers. So there were actions that were put in, reducing vehicle use, those kind of actions. And then meanwhile, the state also was doing actions that were broader, such as requiring solar panels to be put on new homes by 2020. Now, that happened after the climate action plan, so they didn't incorporate those as actions per se. Those weren't requirements that were put in the climate action plans, but those are things that influenced what the numbers were.
Sure.
We also had things that influenced what the numbers were, such as the disasters we had, like the campfire, which spewed massive amounts of greenhouse gas emissions into the air. So all those things, impact the inventories and impacted those numbers. Those are the sorts of things that need to be taken into account now during the update process.
Sure.
Looking at the actual inventory. So at what the city particularly discovered is that they needed to have more rubber meets the road type of actions, and not only look at what we can do, but how do we pay for them? And how do we actually implement them? Because it's one thing to say that we want to have, again, we'll go back to the solar proposal. We want to require that every house not use fossil fuels. But that's a great goal.
Yeah.
How do you actually implement that?
Sure.
How do you get the funding to make that possible? How do you do the actual mechanics of it? So the new plan has a proposal that they're going to vet at the city's Climate Action Commission about not having natural gas lines in new housing developments. Turns out, I talked to Dr. Mark Steeman, who is the vice chair of the Climate Action Commission. Well, it turns out that a lot of housing is getting solar panels that are sizable enough that they can accommodate the extra electrical demand that it would take to use all electrical appliances.
Okay.
So it might not actually be as much of an issue. There could be a sourcing issue. They need to sort that out. But it might actually be a cost-benefit analysis that pencils out favorably when you think about having to, as from a developer perspective, lay in the gas lines into a new development. If you no longer have to do that step of the process, and you just have to put in the same solar panels that you were going to be installing anyway, it might not actually cost more money, for a new home from what's already being required.
Sure.
So that's actually, and then there may be funding that's available, through grants and incentives that people are getting now to put on solar panels. So that's kind of what's being looked at now. And for when the city's going forward, the county's about 6 months behind in their process, 4 to 6 months behind. So they haven't gotten to the stage in the process where they are looking at those kind of proposals. So we'll know a little bit more in a few weeks when they release data, and when they get a little further in a few months, where they're starting to make those kind of proposals to address the issues that are county specific, where their emissions come from and where they can mitigate.
You've mentioned that they're in the process right now. Where in this process might there be opportunities for the public to give input?
The city has the Climate Action Commission that meets the second Thursday of the month, and they're going to have their next meeting coming up in just a few weeks, and that's where they're going to be talking about this electrification that I was just talking about.
Okay.
They're also, so that's going to be an opportunity for people to weigh in on that. They're also just recently talked about some of these funding sources. So that's on the Chico Sustainability site, I believe has a link there. But also if you go look on the city site, on the Climate Action Commission page, there's linking back to that agenda item. And then moving forward, there'll be a link to the agenda item for this particular discussion on electrification. So there's that public comment for the Chico Climate Action Plan update through the Climate Action Commission. County, it's still pretty much at the staff level because they're working through the planning division to release the numbers. And they're also had a public hearing, actually a public workshop to get some initial feedback. And they're reaching out to stakeholders, basically the sectors of environment, business, agriculture, et cetera. But they're going to then wrap back around and release this data, seek additional comment that way through the planning division, and also then go before the planning commission on the county level. And that's, again, another opportunity for the public to speak out on this issue. So basically, there's lots of opportunity for public engagement. Great. Again, county planning commission and county planning division, and then the city's climate action commission.
All right, Evan, great. Thanks. I appreciate your time.
Absolutely.
For more information on the local climate action plans, including links to city, county, and state websites, find Evan's story, Planning for a Future, at chico.newsreview.com.
What do we got here, man?
This piece was put up here originally as Happy Valentine's Day, Chico, and then later when the first piece fell down, I put it up on April Fool's Day 4 years ago plus a few days.
Awesome.
And whoever's seen it has had fun looking at it, and that's it.
Fun's over.
Fun's over. Fun.
On March 21st, Chico lost a giant in the local art scene. David Sisk, better known as Sisko, died suddenly while hiking in Upper Bidwell Park. He was 75. That audio clip we just listened to was from a 2014 interview for Guillermo Mash's old Without a Roof series, and it chronicled the day that the artist was taking down one of his pieces of chimp art, a whimsical form of gorilla art. The paint and plywood cartoon of a blue Buddha-like figure had been sitting on the pole in the once-vacant lot at the corner of Main and First Streets for more than 3 years. That art and the public display is the perfect snapshot of the much-loved local artist's approach. But for a bigger picture, there's no better overview of the man and his work than a 2013 article by longtime CNR editor and writer Bob Speer titled The World According to Sisko. What follows are excerpts from that feature, beginning with a reference to the aforementioned chimp art. People familiar with the art of David Sisk will recognize it as one of his whimsical Sisko figures, those odd little round and nearly featureless characters that seem to pop up everywhere in his eclectic work. On billboards, t-shirts, and bolo ties, on cutout wall pieces and posters, and on furniture, paintings, postcards, pins, and photographic assemblages. There's Sisk's signature image, the imaginary alter ego of Sisko the artist, and they are emblematic of what makes his otherwise politically charged and spiritually challenging art so accessible and enjoyable. His friend and fellow artist Bruce Ertl calls it sort of an activist guerrilla type of art, but one he makes a lot of fun of, which enables him to slip in his message. It's so harmless and appealing, you don't realize you're being told something to stop and think and reconsider. I'm not an art scholar, and there's a lot I don't know, Ertl continued, but with him, I think we have an original. David Sisk got much of his artistic talent from his father, Marcus Sisk, who loved to draw cartoon figures. Indeed, Sisk has incorporated into his own work some of the styles and images he got from his father's sketchbook, which date from the 1930s and 40s. His father died young, at just 53, after working his entire adult life for PG&E. This convinced Sisk that he didn't want a career that sucked the life from me. I didn't want to wait to make art, he said. And he has no desire to leave the area, where his family has lived since the 1870s, and where he grew up and went to school, Chico High, Chico State, and where he and his sister Claudia care for their 95-year-old mother. His son Jeb's daughter, Olive Air Sisk, represents the fifth generation of Sisk in Chico, and on her mother's side is also a descendant of the late John Ayers, the longtime chairman of the Chico State Art Department, after whom Ayers Hall is named. The Sisk's roots go deep. If you recognize David Sisk's work, it's probably because you've seen one or more of the 40 or so art billboards he's painted over the years. He started working for the J.B. Stock Company in the mid-1970s, painting commercial billboards, but it was never comfortable for him. He's afraid of heights, for one thing, and eventually, in 2000, he became sick from breathing paint fumes and had to quit. Some years later, the man who bought the company from Stott, Jim Moravec, saw some of Sisk's artwork and got the notion that his unused billboards would make a good venue for it. Sisk's artistic billboards began appearing soon after. At the time, Sisk was operating the now-closed Drive-By Gallery on 7th Street between Broadway and Main. While exhibiting artwork in the gallery's large windows, he and other artists, including, at times, his son and daughter, were using the rest of the gallery as a studio space. By nature, Sisk says he's an introvert. He once described himself to a reporter as a sociophobic exhibitionist, a phrase that describes him fairly accurately. He says his wife, Beth Sisk, is the extrovert in the family, the one who really enjoys engaging with people. She gets me out of the house, he said. Ertl said he thought one of the reasons Sisk's art is so accessible is because he's not an egocentric guy, and there's a childlike quality to his work. But David is a very sophisticated guy in his thinking. He's very honest, open guy, living every moment. Sisk is acutely aware that, as he put it, the world is a gnarly place. He wants to call attention to that truth, but he doesn't want to make things worse. Why add to the suffering, he asks. Sisko, he said, speaking of both his alter ego and himself, the artist, is lighthearted. He's a respite. Find the rest of Bob Spear's feature on David Sisk at the CNR archive site, newsreview.com/Chico. Search The World According to Sisko. You're listening to the Chico News and Review Show on KZFR, 90.1 FM and KZFR.org. During his time in Chico, Rami Rodriguez has been behind some of the most fresh and challenging music being made around these parts. From his solo experiments as DMT, to his wild and often chaotic performances as an MC for the genre-bending rap, rock, punk, noise crew Pervert. His latest project is Lagrima, a kind of sound collage endeavor that's composed on Rodriguez's trusty Akai MPC 2000 XL sequencer sampler and draws on a wide array of available sounds, including drum machine, dollar bin records, and even old warp cassettes that have been recorded over. The end result is the 13-song Moss, just released on Spotify and cassette. I spoke to Rodriguez this week via Zoom, and he talked about how the new solo persona came about during and because of the pandemic.
I mean, I've been thinking about it for a minute, but since, like, having so much time to myself and just, like, having to focus on a bunch of shit, like, a lot of self-assessment, a lot of, like, all the insanity that was going on in the world and still continues to go on in the world, and just, like, I don't know, all the implications of, like, mostly, like, self-assessment, and then also there's, like, this crazy feeling of a paradigm shift, and like, it just kind of felt, like, necessary to like, abandon, not necessarily abandon, but just kind of, like, you know, like, start something fresh, do something new. Like, with this, like, release and, like, with kind of, like, changing the name and, like, this new, like kind of, I don't want to call it, like, a rebirth or whatever, but it's, like, a reworking, mm-hmm. and, like, really trying to, like, finesse and, like, be more intent, like, have more intent with, like, the shit that I'm doing.
You've been listening to excerpts from the Lagrima song Hurry during the breaks between segments on the show, and what follows is the 90-second opening track for Moss, Yo Soy. Search Lagrima on Spotify to stream the rest.
Nosotros podemos despedazar y desangrar a una unidad entera, hombre por hombre, uno al día, durante mucho tiempo, durante muchos años, y nadie va a saber de dónde viene el golpe. Nadie. Y la montaña es nuestra y la noche es nuestra. Eso es lo que no sabe.
Chico News and Review is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Tires Plus Complete Auto Repair in the heart of downtown Chico, offering Michelin and Cooper tires, alignments, oil changes, repairs, and maintenance. On the corner of 624 Broadway Street, open from 8:30 to 5 Monday through Saturday. Find Tires Plus Complete Auto Repair on Facebook and at 342-8338. And by Northern Star Mills, serving the North Valley with farm, garden, and pet supplies since 1898. Northern Star Mills offers natural and organic soil amendments and fertilizers, as well as natural and holistic pet supplies. Northern Star Mills is located in downtown Chico, across from Bidwell Mansion. Thank you for once again tuning in to the Chico News and Review Show, and thank you, KZFR 90.1 FM, for hosting us each Thursday. And of course, thank you to Cat Depot for our theme music that opens and closes the show. Remember, the March print edition of the Chico News Review is out and available in racks all over Butte County, and you can see the paper online as well at chico.newsreview.com. And one last note, tonight was the final show of the Butte Report. I just want to give a quick shout out to Sue Hildebrand for the great job she did bringing the important issues of this community to the radio. It takes a ton of time to produce a news show, and I am glad we'll still be hearing the fruits of Sue's hard work on her other show on KZFR, The Real Issue, Wednesdays at 6 p.m. With this schedule change, the CNR show will be airing a half hour earlier each week, starting next Thursday, April 1st at 5 p.m. Take care.
And you are tuned to listener-supported community radio at 90.1 KZFR Chico, streaming worldwide at kzfr.org. And, of course, on your smartphone with the KZFR app. It's time for Butte Views and Beyond. And welcome to Butte Views and Beyond. My name's Ray Lager. I'll be your host this evening till 7 o'clock, followed by Peanut Butter and Jelly Time. And Butte Views and Beyond focuses on the arts, culture, events, and economic development that is brought about by those activities and just about being part of community. Butte Views and Beyond is made possible by you, the KZFR supporter, and Friends of the Arts, state local partner to the California Arts Council since 2001. Friends of the Arts creates economic opportunities by providing and supporting events and publishing a bi-monthly arts and culture newsletter. Stay in